basically speaking, it was a new job, you see. And the staff there hadn't been used to somebody coming in and as the chief clerk, basically. But I didn't really get any aggro from the people that were there either. I mean, David Johnson had been was moved away and went to Robin Hood. So the people that were there were receptive, really, to this new guy who turned up. And again, it was the same thing. It was a case of, OK, I can dish tickets out, you can dish tickets out, and basically the same process again, doing the job and proving that I could do it.
Can you remember your first day going
yes,
there?
Yes, I can remember it very clearly,
what
actually.
Happened?
I got introduced to Tom Swaby, of course, and I got introduced to all the Fred James and George Flack. He was the porter then. He actually eventually became the number taker. Got introduced to everybody, basically. Wandered around, talked to everybody, and just got my feet under the table.
Where were you living then?
I lived in a flat in Kirkstall Lane in Leeds, owned by the railway, right next to Headingley Station, at the princely sum of 29 shillings a week rent, which I got when I got married. I was very fortunate, actually. It's a nice flat. And we, Anne and I, concentrated on buying the furniture for the flat. And then eventually in 1960, when I moved to Woodlesford and bought the house in Woodlesford, I'd got the furniture already, and all I was doing then was paying for the house. So it worked very well. I thank them for giving me the flat at Oakfield, 143 Kirkstall Lane, which was very good.
So just paint a picture for me of what Woodlesford, this is your first day, your first week. What you coming on the train from Leeds. Just describe the station to me.
Well, the station, of course, has got platforms which are not opposite one another. And the people who knew what they were doing, when they arrived in the direction from Leeds, they were all in the back coach, right? So that they knew that when they opened the door and got off the train, they walked round the back of it and crossed over the crossing because they had no bridge at that time, of course. So you knew that the locals would always sit in the back coach coming from Leeds. And you would also get to know eventually that the person who, at the 8:30 train, there was always one girl who was guaranteed to be last. And you could always shut the window down after she'd come for a ticket. You could shut the window down and say, right, that's it, with no more passengers. And it worked all the time, did that. But at that time, of course, as well, the platforms were very low. And they had steps to actually get in. And this was one of the perks of the booking clerks, the young lad booking clerks, to go out and assist the ladies into the train with the tight skirts, you see. And they weren't over chuffed when they hired the platform because they didn't do it anymore. Which, that was quite good. But
What do you mean by steps? I don't quite understand.
The wooden steps. They were just like, well, it was a wooden, about that wide, with just two steps up to help you to get into the train because the platforms were very low, you know. You know where the door is of the where the door of the station building was, that was the height of the platform there, all the way. And then eventually, of course, it sloped up and went higher, and it did it all at the other side as well, it went higher.
So you had these two staggered platforms.
Yes.
What else did you have?
Now, you had a station building which it should have had a floor in, but it didn't, and it was very, very exceptionally high. There was a beam scale on the right-hand side as you went in. You went in through the door into the booking office, and there was a dial scale, which the pigeon men used to put the ballot things on there. And the office was round the corner. The station master's office was on the left, safe in there. It was stone, of course. It was stone built. But there was a funny thing, really, because the general waiting room was on the right-hand side. The ladies' waiting room had been on the left-hand side, but it wasn't there. And what they'd done is they built a wooden partition, quite high, but not right up to the ceiling. And the parcels were in there. They came in off through the front door. They were taken into there, and they were brought out through the front door when I first went there. But over a period of time, I'm sorry, I'm going forward again. Over the period of time, when Harold Ellis came, he acquired some wood. Now, where he acquired it from, I have no idea. But he built some racks, and he put them in the between the wall of the station and the wooden partition, which had blocked off the old ladies' waiting room. And we made it so that the ones on the right-hand side were Rothwell and Alton parcels, and the ones on the left-hand side were Methley and Swillerton. And they were unsheeted. When the clerical staff sheeted the parcels...
What do you mean by sheeting?
Put them on the sheet for delivery for the signatures, right? They sheeted the parcels and left them there. Now, eventually, I cleared out the part through the back room. They have big double doors there. And we said, right, if we clear that out there of pigeon baskets and miscellaneous rubbish, we can sheet the parcels and take them through to the big double doors and straight onto the lorry, instead of having to go round and out through the front door and round and in again.
Where did you work?
Anywhere, basically. The office had fixed desks. There were sloping fixed desks, and at some period in time, they'd had a lot of staff there dealing with various things, of course, but they'd all eventually disappeared. But the desks were still there. They were fixed. So Dennis used to sit on the left-hand side doing the power station things as you went straight in. Round the corner, in the far corner, was Tommy Eversedge doing the stock reports and what have you for the power station. And the other desk was there on the right-hand side. The porter used to come on at 7 o'clock-ish and book tickets before the clerical staff came. The junior clerks came at 8 o'clock, and I came at 8:30. So when all that, the train disappeared at 8:30, and then I used to do the balance, sort the money out, put it into the leather pouch, and the leather pouch went on the 4:07 train to Leeds. So you used to send the money. We didn't bank the money, it was banked by Leeds Booking Office.
Do you remember how much money you were taking from passengers in those days?
Yes, around about 100 quid a day, which was a fair amount, really. And the one thing that Woodlesford Station did have was you could issue tickets from Leeds City and Leeds Central. So if somebody came and said, I want to go from Leeds Central to King's Cross, we could give them the ticket, which was quite useful, really, because it meant that they could, if you had to change, you could change quickly without having to go to the booking office.
And Woodlesford got the credit for earning that money.
That's right, yes. So that was something else that was different to some other places, of course.
What was the atmosphere like in the station building?
The gas light over the booking office window, with me being 6 foot tall, I stuck my head into the top of the gas light. And I said, you know, hey, this is singeing my hair. So eventually, believe it or not, the gas fitter turned up and he put a trapeze in. And it came down from the roof where it came before. Then it had like a trapeze piece, and it had two gas lights at either side. So I didn't stick my head into the gas light anymore, and I got two instead of one. So we were doing all right. When you think about it, there were some pretty awful railway officers. And, I mean, it was no different. It was gas lit. I mean, Criggleston Station, where I'd been, was oil lit. And it had a telephone, which was the where you held the one part of the telephone in one hand and the earpiece to your ear in the other. So, I mean, you couldn't really get any more antique than that. So, basically, gas lighting was great.
And did you have electricity?
No. The station lights outside were all gas. Really, in a way, Woodlesford was better than quite a lot of other places I've been in, you know. So, really, I didn't notice any difference, because I've been in some pretty, what you might call, grotty offices at various times.
What was the decoration like? What was the colour of the paint in 1960?
The front door was northeastern pale blue, right? When they did they started their own colours, and they used to paint the date of the painting when they done the stations. And I've checked on the date, and quite a few of them were 1927 when they'd been painted in the 1960s. You know, I mean, it was they didn't paint them very often, but the front door was definitely northeastern blue, and inside was brown, wasn't it? But it was very big and airy, really. You know, it was it wasn't bad at all.
So it had not been painted for 30 odd years.
No, they didn't paint. They didn't believe in wasting money in painting. Yes.
So you arrived to work as the chief clerk at Woodlesford. You never worked before. Can you describe for me who else was working there and what their jobs were?
Yes. Right. So there's Tom Swaby, who was the boss, of course. He was the station master. Then there was me, Class 3 chief clerk. Then there was two permanent clerical staff who varied themselves. They didn't stick to one job. They used to move around and do. If somebody came to the window, they'd dish a ticket out. If somebody rang up, they would answer the phone. This sort of thing. So the clerical staff were pretty fluid. There was a chap called Tommy Heversedge, who was the checker. Now, he used to sit in the far corner of the back of the office, and it was his job to do the stock reports for Skelton Grange Power Station.
What do you mean, stock reports?
How many wagons were there? And they worked a system called standage, which was a simplified system of demurrage. So if they kept the wagons in Skelton Grange longer than they should have, it was a simplified system, and he used to work the standage out and charge Skelton Grange for keeping the wagons when they shouldn't have. That was his job. There was two porters. There was Fred James, and when I first went there, it was George Flack. The other one was George Flack, who eventually ended up as a number taker. And the number taker used to go collect the labels from the wagons, bring them down to the clerk, who used to check off the waybill to make sure that they paid for that particular wagon. That was his job. The wagons, quite a few of the wagons, were stenciled to work between Skelton Grange Power Station and Glasshoughton, and Skelton Grange Power Station and Prince of Wales. And they were 24.5-ton flat-bottomed wagons.
And they just shuttled backwards and forwards between the pit and
yes, they were stenciled on the side, so you didn't have to have a label. You see, it was a way of not having to label the wagons. They were just shunted up and down, backwards and forwards.
And were these wagons weighed when they were full of coal at some point?
Well, if they were 24.5 tonners, if they were full, 24.5 ton. But the thing was, there was a carriage and wagon examiner down at Skelton Grange Power Station, because the power station used to tipple the wagon, tip it upside down. And the coal all used to come out, of course, but the wagon had been upside down. So this guy used to examine it to make sure that the wheels hadn't fallen off down there. But he wasn't anything to do with Woodlesford Station. He was a separate guy. Lord knows who paid him. He was down there, and that was his job, to make sure the wagons were okay.
So you've got those people. Who else was working on the station?
That's about it on the station. Then the other people really on the paybill. Who was on the paybill? The paybill was two relief signalmen. One was Peter Curtin, and the other one was a chap called Richardson. So they were relief signalmen. They used to go anywhere, basically. And they would put the timesheets in, and we would pay them.
But their home base was Woodlesford Station.
Yes. Then there was, of course, all the signalmen at Waterloo, Rothwell Hague, Methley, all on the paybill as well.
And did Woodlesford have its own proper signalmen, as well as the reliefs?
Yes.
Who were they?
Yes, there was three signalmen in Woodlesford Station Box. And, well, there was three in all of them. They were all full-time, round-the-clock jobs.
Just explain how that relief system worked for people who perhaps don't understand it.
They had district signalman's inspector at Leeds. And if, for example, one of them was sick, he would ask the other two to work 12 hours, which they liked doing, of course, because they got the money. If they didn't want to do that, he used to send the relief signalman. down there. So it was his job, basically, to make sure that they either covered the job by overtime or they covered it with a relief signalman. And he did that. So we had nothing to do with it. All we did was pay him at the end of the day. So they used to collect the time books from all the signal boxes, bring them down to the station. We used to work the wages out and deal with it from there. And we used to go to the bank in Woodlesford with the Gladstone bag and collect the money. And, of course, the railway used to say that you've got to vary the route, you see. Well, I don't know how you vary the route in Woodlesford, because you just simply walk down the same road all the time. But that's another story. Anyway, we never got nobbled with the Gladstone bag, so we got away with that one. So that was paying the wages out. So, you know, we paid the wages out every week.
And we've got the signalman on the payroll now.
Yes.
Who else, then, was employed by the station?
I think that's about it. The plate layers had nothing to do with us. We didn't pay the plate layers at all. They had the same sort of arrangement with their department as the C&W bloke did down at the state. They were looking after their own people.
It sounds a lot of people for a small place like Woodlesford,
yes,
which now doesn't have any staff at all.
Yes.
Why were there so many people there?
Well, of course, the thing is, the signalling was really the ones that were taking the people. And, of course, over a period of time, Leach Signal Box became a power box. And eventually, not immediately, but over a period of time, began to swallow up all the smaller signal boxes, like Woodlesford and like Rothwell Egg and Waterloo, into the power box at Leeds. So, eventually, all the signalmen that were there are not there anymore. They've all gone. And it's just swallowed up by the progress of the power signal box at Leeds. And the same thing happened at York, of course. And you've nearly got, well, you have got to the point now where Leeds power box and York power box are the only two along that line there. You know, it's all just progress. And then, of course, the thing is, of course, as well, that the trains didn't stop on a Sunday. Purely and simply because you had to pay two porters 14 hours a day for the day's work, 8 hours time and three quarters. So you paid them 14 hours and you didn't take the money to cover it. So the trains didn't stop. So when the train, then the station became an unstaffed halt and you didn't have to pay the porters 14 hours wage, they actually started stopping. So the train service was better as an unstaffed halt than it was as a staffed halt, which is weird, isn't it? You know?